Hey everybody, welcome to the only movie podcast, Viewing Angles. And it's me, as always, your A-host, Dan Leo, and with me, as always,
it's the B-host, Robert Mackie.
We are A-B testing, and nobody's DMing us. We have no results to go off of, so we're just kind of
yeah, we're going to keep going with it until we get some solid results. We're going to run it through Google Analytics real quick.
Yeah, what's the sample size you need to have for it to be statistically significant? I think it's 530, N equals 536. All right, well, let's get right into it. The news of the weekend is the box office. Not a whole lot. First of all, we're going to be reviewing two movies this week. We will be doing the new Harry Potter Extended Universe Adventure.
The Wizarding World.
Yeah, Harry Potter and the Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, Part 2, The Crimes of Grindelwald. Like, as far as the long title goes, that's one of the longest. I like how they're just like, Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, which means that the first one is technically Fantastic Beasts, colon, and Where to Find Them. It means it was a pun title.
You know what it is? They called this one Fantastic Beasts because the true beast is Grindelwald himself.
Hmm.
He's the most fantastic beast.
Yeah, because he definitely doesn't commit any crimes in this.
Not at all. His followers commit a couple, but even then, they're not like they're not terribly heinous. You know, he's not committing genocide yet.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they kill that baby, but whatever.
They do kill that baby. There's a lot of baby death in this movie. Like,
yeah. I mean, more so than in most Harry Potter. I feel like Harry Potter
more so than in any Harry Potter.
How infanticide is a huge part of the story.
Yeah. Well, like the entire premise of Harry Potter is based on the main villain trying to kill a baby and failing.
Yeah. Classic schmuck. Am I right?
So like, it really shouldn't be that surprising that babies die in this. I'm surprised it actually took them this long to get to infanticide.
Yeah, it should have started right off the bat.
Yeah.
So the box office weekend is pretty standard, I would say. But Fantastic Beasts, Crimes of Grindelwald made a butt ton of money. It made $62 million in America alone, which is a lot.
What, 250 global?
Yeah,
debut?
So it outpaced the first Fantastic Beasts a little bit, which is interesting to see that people were more like they saw the first Fantastic Beasts because I've never seen it.
And no, this opened under the first Fantastic Beasts.
Oh, I thought it did over. And
no, I think that's why that's why this is kind of big news is that, you know, I think it's common knowledge that sequels generally make more money than the first one. But
okay, sometimes,
for a franchise like this, like for Harry Potter, I think that's, you know, this is a franchise that's like as big as Star Wars or Marvel. Mm-hmm. So for a sequel to come out and make less money than its direct predecessor is kind of surprising to a lot of people.
Look up what the weekend box office was for the first Fantastic Beasts. What was the gross worldwide?
I'm checking right now, but I'm pretty sure, if my memory serves me, the first Fantastic Beasts opened to like 70 million.
Oh, I'm talking about globally though. Like, I feel like who even cares about the US only?
Oh, okay.
Especially for a British movie, Robert.
Okay, so domestic, I don't know, I can't see what the global opening weekend is, but the domestic opening weekend was $74 million for the first Fantastic Beasts.
Oh, so it underpaced it by like $12 million.
Yeah, which is pretty big.
Yeah. What's the, are you on Box Office Mojo right now?
I am.
Just click on the name and you click on the thing.
I did. Let's see, what was the opening weekend? Weekend gross today? No, it's only giving me domestic gross. Oh, here, foreign. No, that's total.
I can see it right here. Literally the first thing. Wait, domestic gross. Oh, all together.
Yeah, see,
okay.
Shut the
domestic
fuck up.
Worldwide summary. Worldwide gross. People summary. What? They got a lot of stuff on Box Office Mojo. It's a great site. This is an unofficial plug.
Okay, no, hang on. I found it.
Okay.
So, opening weekend.
I found it. Wait, never mind.
Yeah, opening weekend, the foreign gross was $145 million.
Okay, so this made... And so for this one, the foreign gross, I see it's $191 million.
Yeah, so I think globally, the movie did do better, but domestically, it did worse than the initial.
Right, because I think the international market was like, whoa, good special effects and incoherent plot? Sign me up. Like,
oh, yeah. Dude, well, that's the thing. America is still the dominating force and probably will be the dominating force until China loosens up their censorship laws in the entertainment world.
You think that's the only thing that is stopping China from being the like global powerhouse? I don't feel like Americans will watch Chinese movies.
I think they will. Once China starts making their own, like, well, so that's the thing. A lot of, like, America has these franchises, these big franchises, but I think that we're going to get to a point in time when, you know, the returns just aren't what they were for these franchises, and hopefully we'll start getting more big original blockbuster franchises, or at least lesser-known franchises. But there are some, like, at least in the Chinese market, like, there's a series called the Wandering Earth series, which is becoming pretty big in America too. And it's by a Chinese author, and it's this, you know, 3-book sci-fi epic. And the first film is coming out, I think next year. And it, like, I've seen the trailers for it and it looks pretty good. I feel like if, I don't know, China continues on the path that they're on in terms of, film domination, because they already the Chinese box office is already bigger than the American box office. So right. All they need to do is penetrate a foreign market, the American market, and I think that they're going to be something to contend with. And Hollywood, I think, is helping them along that path because we're catering so hard now to a Chinese audience. It's like we're just slowly being conditioned to accept more and more Chinese blockbuster style films.
Now, I don't think that American audiences will go for subtitled blockbusters.
Well, I don't think they're going to be subtitled. I think they're going to be like, you know, a mixed language situation.
Oh, where it's like they have like some characters are subtitled and some are not. And they weave that into the story.
Like the Great Wall.
Interesting.
That's just my prediction, though. You know, I'm not a scholar. I'm not making, you know, this isn't my thesis. I'm just putting that out there.
Yeah, this is my sermon. No, I think that's a pretty interesting, just the way the box office is moving. And we can tell that, I don't know if this movie is exactly the best example, but we know that movies have begun to value plot and quippy dialogue and more relying on big special effects and storytelling through imagery rather than language. And getting all those huge stars. So, I don't know. We will see. What else? Okay, we had Grindelwald, and then we had Dr. Seuss's The Grinch coming at $38 million, and then Bohemian Rhapsody at $16 million. So, big drop-offs, but The Grinch is still making a lot of money. Oh, Bohemian Rhapsody is still making a lot of money. Bohemian Rhapsody has the total gross of what The Grinch has right now. And so, they are a week apart and have basically the same numbers, which is hilarious to me.
Yeah, man, kids can get their parents to spend money.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're seeing Bohemian Rhapsody, you might be seeing it, you know, with a friend or like a date. So you're buying like 2 tickets. When you're seeing The Grinch, you're buying 4 tickets. You're getting it for the whole family, man.
Oh, yeah. I don't think Illumination Entertainment is ever going to lose money on a film. Like, as soon as Despicable Me became a hit, and they had that Minion branding going on, all they have to do now is show like that Illumination logo and then have a fucking Minion in the trailer.
Oh, yeah.
That's it. That's a box office hit right there. People would probably pay $10 just to watch that fucking trailer.
Line up and watch these trailers.
Yeah.
I saw they had a lot of good advertising for The Grinch, though. Like, I remember in the CTA, Clark and Lake, one of the busiest stops in Chicago, they had a big like sign with just The Grinch and said like, I'm sure the next one will come soon, being like a dick. And you're like, all right.
Yeah.
This very interesting advertising campaigns.
Yeah. I think a part of it too was just, you know, the Grinch, there was a lot of meme culture that sprouted from the Grinch marketing. Where like I saw a lot of Photoshopped images of that picture that was on the CTA of just like the Grinch and then a random quote. Some of them are pretty fucking good. Like, there's my favorite one that I saw was just that billboard of the Grinch. And then the quote was just, I'm going to fuck your dad.
You're just that weird face. Yeah.
And then people are like, dude, the Grinch advertising is getting pretty aggressive.
I saw my daddy kissing Santa Claus.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of feel bad though, because like this is outperforming easily, the Robert Zemeckis Jim Carrey Grinch, which is
I think it was Ron Howard, wasn't it?
Was it Ron Howard?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought so. I could be wrong.
Yeah, from the director of Solo. but yeah, that movie is kind of a guilty pleasure. Like that's a Christmas movie I can go back and watch pretty easily, just because I think Jim Carrey's pretty good in that.
Like when he's like looking at his schedule and like, how will I ever fit him in?
Yeah, it is self-loathing, depression, eating myself to sleep. Yeah,
so like, interesting.
Yeah,
interesting joke for a kid's movie.
I do kind of want to see this new Grinch though, just because like, so I didn't even realize that Benedict Cumberbatch was voicing the Grinch until like a week before it came out.
And then I wonder why I'd been seeing him so often.
He's Doctor Strange now. He's an A-lister. But they also, like, the soundtrack, they got Tyler to do a song for it.
Yeah, which is hilarious.
Yeah, I'll probably watch it when it's, like, on HBO or something at some point.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Well, should we go right into, let's talk about our first. So, we saw two movies this weekend. We saw Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, starring Eddie Redmayne and a million other people.
And Johnny Depp.
And Johnny Depp. Mostly Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
And then we saw Widows, the new Steve McQueen movie. Steve McQueen, the Irish director known for 12 Years a Slave, Shame,
is he
and
Irish?
Hunger. He is Irish, yeah.
Oh, I thought he was British.
You know, I don't know. I assume that he's Irish because all of his movies have had an Irishman in them, and one of them is about
British.
The IRA. He's British? Did you look it up?
He's a British, yeah. Mm. He's a Brit.
But is he from Northern Ireland?
No, he's from London.
Okay, well, whatever, dude.
I mean, hey, those are interesting conflicts, but
yeah.
I'm sure he just, you know, being a Brit, yeah, because that's one of the things, like, when I watched his earlier, like, when I watched Hunger, I was just like, man, I don't know what the, like, I still don't understand what the full reach of, like, the Troubles were. I know that's what all the Brits called them, like, the IRA, Irish-British War from the 70s. And apparently, like, I never realized just how intense it was, too, and just, like, how much domestic turmoil there was during that era, because as an American, I never had to think about that shit.
Yeah, you think about, like, the Irish as, leprechauns and drinking and all this, and like, nah, these people are, like, organized and fighting for their like freedom from Britain.
Yeah.
And like they're still like it's crazy that in the 20s there was a war. They fought a war. The Irish were like, "Hey, we're going to go." The IRA fought a war and England eventually gave them most of their country.
So
and now they're just like a part of their country that's like, "Well, we get Northern Ireland and you guys can have everything else." And they're like, okay."
So the Brits got Northern Ireland or the Irish got Northern Ireland?
The Brits got Northern Ireland. So Northern Ireland is still a part of the UK. But Ireland, as we know it, like, so the whole island of Ireland, most of it belongs to Ireland and is a separate country from the United Kingdom.
I didn't even know.
Yeah. And then in Northern Ireland is the northern part of the island that still belongs to the UK. So basically, and they're divided by Catholics and Protestants.
What's the difference?
Do you want the long answer or the short answer?
Just give me the short answer. What's the main difference between Protestant and Catholic?
The Catholics believe in the Pope and the Protestants do not.
That's it?
That's not it, but that's like the biggest one, you know?
But I mean, like, do they have the same Bible?
No. Well, kind of.
But it's not like, so like, but Protestants are still like Christian though, right?
Yes, they still believe in Christ. They don't believe in the catechism and they don't believe like some people will, you know, Lutherans have some kind of specific, like some Protestant religions do not believe that the Virgin Mary was actually like without sin. Like there's a lot of weird divisions that don't. Just rooted in like old style.
Yeah, I can. There's so many fucking debate. Branches of Catholicism.
Yeah, it's, you know.
Oh, God.
It's very interesting.
You know so much more about the whole history of the church than I do. All this like British European history.
Mm-hmm.
That's, yeah.
It's interesting.
It is. And I kind of like. It's a small side note. We're not really going to talk about this in this episode, but I watched Outlaw King and I did enjoy it a lot. But I feel like I wish I had known more about the historical conflict.
Robert the Bruce?
Yeah. And just like what the war was like. I mean, I got the gist of it. Scotland wanted their independence from England, but I feel like there's so much more to that story. Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Scotland didn't get it.
But yeah, I wish I'd known more, but I don't. Still a good movie, though.
Yeah, European history is very interesting.
It's so complex.
Yeah, so much over such a huge amount of time. What, the history of America is like 250 years. The history of Europe's thousands of years. Like,
yeah, you have like the Western Front, and then you have colonists, you have colonialism, then you have like the Western Front and westward expansion, and then you have the Industrial Age, and then like that's all you really need to know about.
Exactly. So let's go. So Steve McQueen, the movie starring Viola Davis, Michelle Rodriguez, Liam Neeson.
The movie's called Widows, by the way. It's not called Steve McQueen.
Right. The movie called Widows. It's not called Steve. It was called that by Steve McQueen.
Yes.
Did you get the little thank you message at the beginning of the movie?
I did. Yeah, like, I was kind of cool. It was kind of endearing. Movies.
And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, but I like knowing that, like, because I didn't know that, like, I thought that this was a script written by somebody else that he, like, just got attached to somehow because of his agent or some other, like, external forces. So it was kind of cool. I didn't realize that this was, like, a passion project of his that he'd been working on for a while.
Yeah, that was really interesting of him being like, I've always wanted to make this movie. I'm like, really, dude? Like, you picked the other three things and over this?
Yeah.
You're like, what are you going to do? Like, I really want to make a heist movie. Well, we only have money for movies about hunger strikes of the IRA in the 70s.
Yeah, the thing about a hunger strike movie is
movies about sex addiction, and then a movie about being a slave for 12 years.
Those are all pretty cheap movies to make. Like, for the hunger strike movie, you don't need any money for a catering budget. You know,
no good snacks on set for that.
Yeah, for shame. All you needed to pay was, you know,
Michael Fassbender's dick.
Yeah,
is because it was on the screen for the most time.
Yeah, just pump that up. And then 12 Years a Slave is probably, I think that, I mean, that's the most expensive movie that he's made so far, and it's a period piece, so I understand why.
Right. Yeah, all the costumes and whatnot.
Yeah,
they have to film on location. I don't think they make cotton anywhere else besides the U.S. anymore.
Yeah.
Egyptian cotton, probably, right?
Is that a thing? Egyptian cotton?
Yeah, I think that's a real thing.
I know there's like Egyptian thread. I believe Egyptian cotton is a thing. I could buy that.
Yeah. I don't know what circumstances you need to make cotton.
Yeah, they're a very extravagant culture.
Yeah. The Egyptians or the Southerners?
The Egyptians. The Southerners are fucking, they can eat corn. They probably wear corn. I don't know.
All right, Mr. Southerner, you live in the South.
All right, I'm not from the South, though.
Yeah, all right, let's talk about Grindelwald first. So, full disclosure, I've seen every Harry Potter movie, I've read every Harry Potter book, but I have not seen the first Fantastic Beasts movie, and I felt like it didn't matter. Rob, you go. What's your Harry Potter experience?
Man. So, I've read every Harry Potter book. Not including The Cursed Child, because that's a play, and I never got around to reading it. I also heard it was really bad. but I've seen every Harry Potter movie, and I have seen the first Fantastic Beasts. And I think that movie, to me, was just okay. It was like a nice return to the Harry Potter universe, and you know, the set design and just the production in general in these movies is always great. And I don't think that changes with Crimes of Grindelwald. But yeah, in terms of plotting and pacing and character development, I'm just like, this movie, like, it should have been a one-off. And
this
movie
is off the wall.
Yeah. And like the first Fantastic Beasts, when it first came out, I was pretty okay with it because I was like, oh, they're just making like an anthology series of Harry Potter Wizarding World stories. But then, you know, like I think like a month or something before it was actually released, they were like, oh, by the way, this is the next Harry Potter franchise. We're making 5 movies out of this.
No, at first they said they were making 3.
Oh,
and then it became, oh, instead of 3, there's 5. We were like, what?
Yeah. And it's
instead
just
of making
like,
three and a half hour long movies, we're gonna make 5 2-hour long. Wait, what?
Yeah, I feel like you really feel that the strain that they're putting on this franchise with this movie, because full disclosure, I did not like this movie. I thought it was kind of like hot garbage.
Full disclosure for a movie review. Yeah. I did not like this movie.
Okay, up front.
I don't think I liked it either. I think I liked parts of it. I don't think I liked it, most of it. I think this goes below 50% for me.
But yeah, so
it's incoherent,
biggest,
broadly.
It's so incoherent. And like, you thought it was incoherent and you hadn't seen the first one.
No, I think it made sense because I was kind of like, every time somebody would get introduced or some storyline, I would be like, okay, this must make sense to somebody because there was a whole nother movie. And then I talked to my friend, Lisa, who I saw it with. And she was like, yeah, a lot of that was just completely reintroduced. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. So
me assuming that there was a reason for everything to be happening made me more confident in the movie and like it a lot more.
Yeah. And then you realize that it actually doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. But what I think is, and I've heard this online, been kind of like talked about, that J.K. Rowling wrote this screenplay like she would write a book. Mm-hmm. Where you have these random characters that just kind of show up and then disappear. And she's like really laying the groundwork for the entire franchise rather than like a one complete movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think because I don't think she adapted the screenplays for the previous Harry Potter films. Like she wrote the novels, obviously.
Correct. Yeah.
But I think somebody else adapted those screenplays so that they, you know, worked for the screen. Which is not the case with this movie, and I think it's pretty evident when you watch it. But I think my biggest problem with this movie is that you can tell there's so much stuff that happens in this movie that just shouldn't. And you can tell it's only happening because they're trying to shoehorn all of these characters from the first Fantastic Beasts into a situation that they just don't belong in.
Yes. I think the movie would have been better if they didn't make the first one and they just made movies about Dumbledore.
That's exactly my sentiment, too. This movie should have just been called The Crimes of Grindelwald, and it should have just been Dumbledore going after Grindelwald.
Yeah, because we all know what the story is going to be. Dumbledore and Grindelwald were romantically involved.
Yeah.
And then they, you know, these muggle boys did something real bad to Dumbledore's sister. So Dumbledore started railing against the muggles, and Grindelwald's like, yeah, man, but let's take it up a notch. Something happened. Dumbledore, his brother, Aberforth, and Grindelwald all dueled, and a stray spell killed his sister, and all this shit happened. That's the stuff we know from the first Harry Potter. Yeah. And then we also know that Grindelwald came to power and he was like Voldemort, but like the first one. And I just want that story. I don't need all this other bullshit that they're giving us.
Yeah. And it's just like the premise of this movie is fucking stupid.
Like, what is the premise of this movie?
The premise of this movie is Dumbledore got a fucking magical zoologist to go after a war criminal for no discernible reason.
Yeah, but what was even Newt doing at that? Like, it's like he wakes up and there's been a trap. He wakes up, there's a travel ban on him. It's like, you can't go this. His brother sets him up with a sweet ass job. All he has to do is hunt a criminal, which is what he ends up doing anyway. And he's
right?
Like,
yeah.
No, I just want to pet plants and then do weird shit, like go into Paris and like do all this other stuff because Dumbledore told me to.
Yeah, just
and
let me
I felt
enjoy
so
my
bad for
in private.
Yeah, I felt so bad for Thaddeus of being like, hey, man, I got you a good thing set up. I can really fix your life. Everything's going to be great.
Yeah, he's like a totally good guy in this movie. But the entire time, like, they're trying to play him off as like, oh, he's like the dickhead brother because Newt says so. But it's like, he didn't do anything that warranted any, like, disdain from the audience throughout the entire runtime of the film.
Yeah, no, he's completely fine. Zoe, this movie doesn't know what it wants to be about, and it's just, like, laying the groundwork for so much. It's like, I don't care about Zoe Kravitz being this Lestrange. that her was plot the doesn't matter fucking, at all.
Anytime she was on screen, I was just like, why is this happening?
Yeah, I'm like, oh, I'm really attracted to you. I get that. And I don't know what, like, your story doesn't have any bearing on anything that's going on.
Yeah.
And you have Newt going to find Tina Goldstein, and you've got these, you know, Queenie and this other dude, who I assume mattered in the last movie, but absolutely do not matter in this movie.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So can we just talk about that character's introduction in this movie real quick?
Which character?
The guy that plays, his name is Jared Fogel. I forget his name. I think he's got like a Jewish, like Joseph Kazin. It's like some Jewish name in this movie.
Okay. The banker, the muggle. Yeah.
The muggle. Yeah. The muggle that's part of their group. When they introduce him in this movie, and spoilers for The Last Fantastic Beasts, but also spoiler, it doesn't matter because they completely wipe it out in this movie. So in the first Fantastic Beasts, it ends with them obliviating that muggle character.
Okay.
Because they were like, oh, he's seen too much magic. We can't have him like blabbing about the magical world to like the other muggles. So they obliviate him and like they wipe his memory and then he just goes on to live the rest of his life as a normal person.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Because the movie made it seem like, oh, they're just in this weird quasi non-consensual relationship.
That's exactly what it was like. I was like, this is kind of fucked up. Like, and they played off for laughs. Like he walks in, like, so Newt goes to his apartment in Paris and this dude, Jared Fogel,
he's in London.
Oh, he's in London right now.
Yeah.
And then this dude, Jared Fogel, walks in with his magical girlfriend named Queenie. And he's just like, oh, what's up, Newt? How's it going? And you find out that one, the obliviate spell from the last movie where they wiped his memory, and you see him forget everything, and he forgets like Queenie and all of his friends and all that shit. In this movie, he comes back and he's just like, oh yeah, I know you tried that, but it just didn't work. And then not only that, he's there against his will because his magical girlfriend cast like a mind control spell on her soon to be husband because right. She wants him to marry her.
The magical version of Rohypnol. That's what she
did.
That's
exactly what it is. And that's,
it's like
it's
a love
super...
potion. Like, oh, you mean like a what? Like,
God, someone... and yeah, he when they break the spell, he's just like, what happened? Where am I? I'm like, that's a fucking date rape drug. Like,
yeah.
You did that and you're playing it off for laughs right now. And yet he's still like, oh, Queenie, I still love you, even though you fucking drugged me, dragged me to London and tried to get me to fucking impregnate you and marry you. Like, it was the weirdest thing. I'm just like, is this really how this movie, like, and this is all within the first 10 minutes. I'm just like, so that's how this movie's going to go down.
No, the first 10 minutes is the most seizure inducing chase, like breakout scene.
Yeah.
And it did really seem like from what I've heard from you and from other people who've seen the movie, that the first movie, I mean, that this really didn't have anything to do with the first movie at all.
Yeah.
Other than the characters have been introduced.
That's the thing. I would say you don't need to watch the first movie to watch this, but you kind of do because there's so much just random bullshit callback to the first movie. And I mean, the fact that the characters are here at all. Like, you need to see the first movie to understand, like, how they found Credence and...
Do you?
Well, kind of, because, and again, in the first, like, I don't... This movie makes me feel like the first movie just shouldn't exist, because...
Agreed, yeah.
In the...
As someone who hasn't seen the first movie and completely understood the entire movie.
Yeah, the first movie, more spoilers for Fantastic Beasts 1, but I cannot talk about how bad this movie is without spoiling everything that the first movie set up. They fucking kill Credence. Like, Credence is dead in the first movie. He is dead. And then in this one, he's back, and they're just like, oh, yeah, it turns out he's not dead. He just ran away to a circus.
Classic.
Yeah.
Hmm.
This movie, like, the more, now that I'm actually getting it all out of my system, I'm getting more enraged by this movie and how bad it was.
It sounds perfect then that I didn't see the first one, so I can really judge it on its merits.
Yeah, on its merits as a solo film, which I feel like still aren't that great.
Yeah, no, I mean, the special effects are pretty great. The storytelling is incoherent, all over the place. people do things that don't make any sense. Like, there are a few cool moments, but it really just seems like things happen because someone decided they should happen and not because of a logical reason.
Yeah.
And it like people are intentionally vague for no reason. You get some fan. It is really like veiled fan service, which with some prosthetics holding it up. There's really not a lot of living story in this movie.
Yeah.
It's all kind of like just put there to prop up these extravagant set pieces and big fan service moments. There's nothing to connect it, though. There's no connective tissue. It's not very good.
It doesn't even forward the current plot at all. Like,
it does, but very vaguely, and for one extreme reason. Like, it's the ending is insane.
Sure. Yeah, the ending. Yeah, but also, like, here's another thing is, so I'm not like, I'm a way bigger Star Wars fan than I am Harry Potter. Like, I could tell you the Star Wars lore, random facts about that universe. Mm-hmm. I can't do that with Harry Potter. I like the franchise, but I'm not, like, reading the extended Harry Potter universe stuff.
Right.
But I've read some, like, you know, forum complaints online and just people discussing the movie who are big fans of this movie. And they're like, that twist at the end makes no fucking sense.
No, it
and apparently,
yeah.
like this isn't the first time J.K. Rowling has like completely fucked up the Harry Potter lore that she wrote by like writing new twists in the movies that she's making.
Is she pulling a George Lucas with the Harry Potter
yes.
series?
I went on a little bit like of a tweet rampage when after I got out of this movie because I'm just like this franchise now is giving me hardcore prequel vibes, and. You know what it is? I think it's just because J.K. Rowling, now that she's in charge of the writing of these films, and she's like, I don't know if, you know, she surrounded herself by yes men or if it's just like the nature of her status in the industry. But nobody's going to say no to J.K. Rowling. Nobody's going to be like, this needs a rewrite. This needs like a revision. You need to like change this character. You need to take this plot element out. Nobody's going to tell that to J.K. Rowling. And I feel like that was the most detrimental thing to this movie because I get it. Like when you said that she's writing this story, like a novel, it makes sense because I think this story could work as like a novel, like a 700 page novel entry. If the Fantastic Beasts series was a book series,
mm-hmm.
but it's not. And it trying to pack all this stuff in into 2.5 hours just makes it feel like nothing important happened. The plot is not moving forward at all. And it's just a fucking incoherent mess.
I agree. What were the best parts about the movie though?
So what I liked,
I think I know. And like, I think Jude Law and Johnny Depp are the best parts, which is hilarious because those were the most contentious announcements of Johnny Depp being Grindelwald and Jude Law being Dumbledore, but they are both fantastic in this movie. What do you think?
I would agree. I think Jude Law as Dumbledore is a great choice, and I think he did well here, but I feel like I don't even want to call him the best part of the movie because like Dumbledore was barely in this movie.
Right.
But
which
there are moments.
Is a testament to how bad the movie was.
Yeah. And hopefully, you know, we get more of him. Like, I hope that the focus of this franchise shifts over to Dumbledore as we get further in.
Yeah, me too.
But Also, Newt doesn't have a character arc in this movie. Like, he doesn't change it all over the course of this movie.
He does choose sides.
Okay, yeah, so that's another thing. This movie, J.K. Rowling, I think, she's a pretty outspoken critic of Trump. If you follow her on Twitter or any social media, you know, like, what her opinion is on Trump. It's a pretty reasonable stance to have.
Yeah.
And I think that
all right, cuck.
Yeah. You fucking Brit cuck.
Yeah.
There are, I think, good elements of like having Grindelwald be like a Trump parody/parallel in this movie. Just the rise of his like populist nationalist ideals. Not nationalist because there's not technically a wizard nation, but seeing his rise to power, I think, is interesting. And it's kind of similar to the Senate, like Palpatine's rise to the Senate in the prequel trilogy. And I'm just drawing a lot
of
connections between.
Have left me scarred.
And I do think that, like, you know, there are scenes in the movie, like during the grand speech when Grindelwald is giving it and the aurors come in And they're like, you know, they're trying to be like, hey, stop this. And he's just like, hey, look at the oars. Look at the opposition. The opposition is the violent side. We're not the violent side. And I'm just like, okay, I get
proceeds
it.
Proceeds to murder a shit ton of people. Like, right?
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, I get the parallels. That's kind of clever. And I also like the idea of like Grindelwald being the seed to plant, like the seed that grows into the following that Voldemort had in the following series. I feel like that makes sense. Like, it's cool. I like that Voldemort didn't just come into power after like 20 years. But man, this movie, like some characters make like some stupid, like, I'm trying not to spoil anything big, but there's some characters that make these stupid fucking decisions and they switch sides. And I'm just like, why are you doing this? And then back to like the whole Newt choosing a side by the end of the movie. It's like, he was in the wrong when he didn't choose a side at the beginning. Like,
yeah,
the sides are genocide or no genocide. Like, you don't really have any moral high ground to be like, I don't choose sides. Yeah. I'm a centrist. I'm a moderate.
Yeah. I'm a scientist.
Yeah.
A fantastic scientist. Crikey.
You do not seek power. You simply seek what is right. I'm like, if that was actually the case, he would have chosen a side a long time ago, unless thinks genocide has benefits. Like,
we know that Dumbledore is a master manipulator, though. That's like his whole MO is that.
But he's a master manipulator for good.
Yeah, exactly. The benevolent dictator is the best form of government. I get it. I read Plato. That's
too bad we'll never see one.
Yeah, we already did, but I'm sure. Wouldn't it be hilarious if Kim Jong-un's son ended up being like a big humanitarian, like super liberal, like actually like made change and made North Korea into like a great place?
Oh, I would love it. I think that's what people were expecting of the Saudi prince when he took over. And look at how that turned out.
Ooh, yeah, gas it up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, crazy. The guise of progressivism.
Yeah. So do you think, is there any way to save this franchise?
Yeah, I mean, I think that... Well,
because above all, I wanted to see the next one. Like, this movie made me like, wow, this was bad, but wow, looks like something's going to happen in the next one.
Yeah, I kind of felt the same way when I walked out of Attack of the Clones. I was like, I'm really looking forward to Revenge of the Sith. Mm-hmm. I'm drawing a bunch of like prequel trilogy parallels right now.
I think the prequels are better than these movies. I think Phantom Menace is better than this movie.
I would agree. I think the plotting is better. I think the dialogue is still shit. And you know, the special effects don't exactly hold up today, but I do think that it has more interesting ideas than this franchise does. And it doesn't feel like it's just trying to stretch out a single idea into five movies. Like, it feels like something George Lucas had planned out.
And it didn't have Duel of the Fates.
Yeah, this movie does not have Duel of the Fates. And it never will. There's never going to be like, okay, please.
Duel of the Fates is the last good, John Williams soundtrack.
I don't know. I think he has some pretty solid moments from, like, I think Rey's theme in Force Awakens is really good. And I like, there's a really good moments in The Last Jedi. That I think, like, he's still a great composer, but you're right. The Duel of the Fates is the last truly iconic John Williams score that he's written. Speaking of John Williams, though, I do think that the soundtrack in this movie was a little lacking. And like, so I didn't realize.
Boring. It was whatever. It was the David Yates, like, washed out palette of soundtracks.
Like, that's what I missed about the original Harry Potter trilogy, or not the original Harry Potter franchise, is that, you know, John Williams did the score for those films. And I mean, John Williams, I think he made a deal with the devil, because I don't know how a single man can write as many iconic themes as he does. But yeah, this movie just felt like it's just a shadow of the Harry Potter franchise in the worst way. And it has the aesthetic outline of Harry Potter, but it's just it's fucking empty.
Yeah. And there's so much talent behind it. You've got Eddie Redmayne, and, you know, I don't like Eddie Redmayne that much, but still, whatever. Eddie Redmayne, you got Jude Law, you got Johnny Depp, you got Zoe Kravitz, who's pretty good. You got Catherine Waterston.
Oh, I love Catherine Waterston.
Yeah, I know. She's amazing. Yeah, put her in Burton and everything. Just, like, so many. David Yates, who is a good director. Like, you've got this amazing cast of people, and if you can't put it together, you know, that's kind of on you. I don't know. What are you feeling? What are you feeling on this movie?
I don't think this movie really works as a film. Like, and here's the thing. It's a 5-movie franchise. Maybe the next film will like change my opinion on this one a little bit, though I doubt it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work as a flick. I didn't like it very much at all, which is a huge bummer. Cause like, I hate getting hyped. Cause like, I saw the trailers for this movie and I was like, oh, this looks better than the first one.
Yeah.
And then I sat down to watch it and I just fucking hated it. And the thing is like, I don't even think it was that poorly directed. I feel like the blame solely lies on J.K. Rowling because it was really just the script and the plot that I couldn't deal with.
Yeah. I agree. As like a film, technically it's pretty good. Like I think the special effects are great and the scenery is great. The way it's filmed, very interesting. Yeah. I think no part of that is bad. And as well, like the acting is all spot on. Nobody's really doing a bad job. It is really just the script and, you know, the plot really doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
I am interested to see the next one though, mainly because of that. I feel like because plots change with every movie, so it could be completely different.
Yeah. And that's like this movie, man, just so much exposition. And I'm telling the moment that I really just wanted to fall asleep in this movie was there's like a scene towards the third act when a certain character gives like 10 minutes of exposition. And then immediately afterwards, another character is like, no, that's all bullshit. Here's another 10 minutes of exposition. And this is what actually happened. And it doesn't help at all. In fact, I think it makes it worse because like the true story of what the dude was explaining is even worse than what he thought happened. I'm just like,
yeah,
Jesus.
You're just like, why am I supposed to know this? Why is this being introduced in this sloppy way?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, so overall, I would say only don't pay to see it.
Yeah. No need.
But there's
on HBO if you want when it comes out. I think it's going to be on HBO eventually, but yeah.
Yeah. But there is a movie that you should pay to see.
Absolutely.
And it's called Widows. And it's got Viola Davis. It's got Liam Neeson's. It's got Michelle Rodriguez. It's got Elizabeth Debicki. It's got Daniel Kaluuya. It's got Colin Farrell, Robert Duvall. It's an all-star smash. Yeah, Carrie Coon is in this movie, and it takes place in Chicago.
Yeah. This movie bucks.
This movie is so good. See it right now. Don't even stop. Like, hit pause on this.
That's the review. Go see it. It's amazing. Like, if this movie doesn't get Oscar nominations, I think I'm going to be upset. I might just riot in my apartment.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go through step by step. First of all, pacing. Perfect.
Yeah.
Great. All the way through. Performances. Everyone is great. Highlights. I think Viola Davis is amazing in everything she's in. So whatever. And then Elizabeth Debicki, she's amazing in it. I think she's got the best character arc out of anybody.
She's so tall.
She's so, there's a scene where she's like in heels and she's around everybody else. It's like, wow, you tall.
Yeah.
You're tall as hell. Like,
that's my fetish.
Yeah. And then Daniel Kaluuya, what a knockout performance.
Right.
What intimidating, like kid brother vibe.
Can we just talk about his performance? Like, as we get into the review, I want to start with his performance because I think it might be my favorite part of the movie. Like, and I'm so glad that the trailers withheld as much as they did because I was not expecting this level of performance out of him at all. Like I knew that like him and I forget the name of the guy that plays Paperboy, but he's Paperboy from Atlanta.
Yeah.
Which is also a great show. If you don't watch it, you should definitely watch it. But I thought that he was going to be the main villain and he is technically, but it's Daniel Kaluuya that does the dirty work. Like he's his, you know, right-hand man essentially. And fuck, is this guy intimidating?
Oh and yeah.
It's crazy because this is the same guy that like one, I forget that he's British all the time. Like
these great accents.
Yeah. The first time I saw him was in that Black Mirror episode about like the American Idol parody that they had.
Right, yeah, where you're always on a bike and you're buying credits.
And I still think that's one of the best episodes of Black Mirror ever. And his performance of that, I still think is legendary. His monologue at the end, fucking masterful. And then he was in Get Out. In Get Out, he plays a completely different character, just like the super unassuming young, like American, like mid-20s guy photographer. And just the fact that he's able to switch characters like this so easily and go from someone like his character in Get Out to this intimidating like henchman who's like not like intimidating in the sense of like, oh, he kills people. He's intimidating because he knows exactly what to do and how to deliver his lines in a way that are just like, man, I wouldn't fuck with this guy. Like, I don't care how short he is. I don't care like that he's not jacked. I would not fuck with this guy. He's extremely intense. And it's amazing.
He creates situations where the people around him are going to like talk to their friends about him and be like, yeah, you'll never believe the stuff that I just saw.
Yeah.
This dude did some fucked up stuff.
Yeah. And like, it's so rare because I feel like you don't actually get like you get villains that are intimidating through reputation. I feel like in a lot of films.
Yeah.
And it's so rare to see that actually in action where it's like, you know, we don't know anything about this character's backstory. All we get to see is his personality and his characteristics happen when he's confronting other people in the story. And I feel like that's the best way to build a character. Like, we don't need a 10-minute talk about where he came from. Like, oh, that he was like an orphan that grew up like on the streets and it was a hard life for him. And now he's doing this. You don't need that. You get it all through his actions. And it's beautiful. Yes.
It is so good, and it really highlights McQueen's use of that kind of free flow, like the great blocking. He's got a great stage picture, is able to block everything perfectly. So when he moves the camera around in one take, he's kind of moving it around the entire situation so you can see everything that's going on that he's laid out for you, and it really returns. Like you get a really good return on watching it because you see, oh, this is set up in a very specific way, and now I'm getting to see all of it. But it's not filmed just like a camera put right on the stage and seeing like, all right, now just watch this happen. No, it's moving around. It's still a dynamic camera. It's showing us a lot of things, but it's so carefully planned out that everything is being executed so well. It's got almost a documentary vibe.
You're like,
oh, I'm watching something unfold. This is not like a camera. This is not how it's happening. It's you're watching the real life thing.
Yeah.
And it's very compelling. And this movie highlights it very well. This movie also tackles a lot of different subjects very well.
So surprising.
Yeah. A bit of a social message at some parts. And it's surprisingly emotional. It is an emotional heist movie. The heist is not that big a part of the movie. It's really about the characters and their emotional arcs.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it too, like, you know, I think one of the biggest themes in this movie is the whole idea that like, oh, these widows are powerless without their husbands. And
yeah,
I feel like, you know, that's the main emotional arc that this movie wants to take. But man, the action in this movie, as there's not that much of it, which I think makes it even more effective.
Yeah.
And what really stood out to me when I was sold on this movie within the first 5 minutes, just with that intro.
Great editing on the intro.
Yeah, the editing is fantastic, and the way it intercuts like the relationships of each of the husbands with their wives, and how like they all have like pretty dynamic different relationships. Viola Davis's relationship with Liam Neeson is completely different than Elizabeth Debicki's relationship with John Bernthal. Mm-hmm. And how it intercuts that relationship building with the heist where the husbands die. Because spoiler alert, the premise of this movie is that it's called Widows for a reason.
Right.
But man, that action scene and just that like, it's not a long one take, but it is still a one take where they're in the van and they're escaping from the cops and like the doors are falling off and you have like these cop cars getting hit by debris and rolling over. I'm just like, holy shit, Steve McQueen can do action. Because that was my biggest concern going into this movie. Is that he'd never done a real action film before, and I was afraid he was going to fall back on, like, you know, standard action editing and blocking tropes.
Uh-huh.
He does not. Like, he makes it his own, and I fucking love it.
Yeah, he's great. The situation, the way they capture Chicago, what's hilarious is that a big part of the movie takes place in the Fireside Bowl, which is right by my house, apartment.
Yeah, did they film on location?
They must. No, yeah, that's the actual Fireside Bowl. What Damn. A dump. Like,
why didn't you go be an extra?
I know. I never even knew they were filming. But you should have seen, as soon as she opens the book up and the Fireside Bowl matchbook comes out, everyone in the theater was laughing hysterically. Yeah. Like, oh my God.
That's Fireside pretty funny. Bowl. Oh man, that's I do think, like, I love that they set this movie in Chicago too, and I like that it mm-hmm. wasn't just set dressing. Like, there's a specific moment in the scene where Colin Farrell's character, he's on his political campaign and he's giving a speech in the like one of the projects, and then there's a one take where he's in the car when he finishes his speech and he gets into the car and he has like the conversation with his wife / assistant. I don't actually know.
Right.
Like,
yeah. I didn't get the relationship was. There. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure she was just this assistant that he was fucking.
Okay. Yeah.
But there's that conversation, and like, it's just like a quick, like 5 minute car drive, and it's a one take the entire time. And you don't see them in the car at all discussing. It's not like a, shot reverse shot. All you see is the outside of the car and like the buildings that you're passing as you're driving through, and how close the not poverty line, but like
how close the poor neighborhood and the rich neighborhood are, even though they're in the same voting block.
The red line. Yeah. How close they are to his actual house, and just like that economic disparity that exists within the city.
Yeah, especially among whites and blacks.
Yeah,
it's I mean,
and like that's the thing, though, is this movie doesn't beat you over the head with it.
Right. It's just like, oh, we're showing, they make a point of saying like you're running for, and the Mulligans, they're obviously I modeled off of the Madigans in Illinois politics, famously career politicians. Mike Madigan runs all the politics in Illinois pretty much. And he's got family members, a lot of nepotism going on. Chicago is known for its politics. So, but it was funny to me how clear of a grasp the McQueen had on Chicago, from at least what I see living here.
Yeah,
that it felt very authentic, and it didn't feel like somebody was just like, oh, we'll use it as like second set decoration. It feels like, I'm going to actually take the time and investigate and figure out like what makes the city kind of work. And like, they go on the CTA, they hit the buses, they talk about the green, like a big part is the Green Line being expanded. All very interesting stuff. And it all works together so well. Things that you don't understand get brought back, and everything serves the higher purpose of the movie. I think it does a really good job overall. And it's constantly, you don't know what you're expecting from it. And it constantly shifts those expectations, fulfills them, partially fulfills them, changes what you want from them, and still gives you everything you need.
Yeah. And I feel like it has a compelling villain too. And to me, it kind of pulls a Daredevil, or I guess it pulls a Wilson Fisk more specifically, in the sense that the main villain of this movie still has forces that he's contending with. Like, honestly, the widows, like the main characters of this movie, are just like a side distraction for him. He really doesn't care about that conflict at all. And I love when stories do this, because I feel like that's how you create a compelling villain. Like, you create an antagonist, but you give him a force to fight against too, so that way you at least, like, it's possible to empathize with him, and it makes him a lot more of a dynamic villain versus just I'm a bad guy because I'm a bad guy and I like evil.
Yeah, this movie had a lot of good, every character was built out very well and served the purpose for the overall movie. I'm just so happy it came out. I'm so happy McQueen nailed it again. He's 4 for 4.
Yeah,
one of the best filmmakers right now.
God,
really doing good work. I would see anything now that he does.
I am going to see anything that he does. That was the case before, and it still is.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think this is one of the better, I wouldn't even classify it as a heist movie. It's got those elements, but it really is a great character study, and it does more. It's about more than the heist.
Yeah.
It's got bigger ambitions, and it really nails those and kind of like sneaks it in like, oh, you think you know what the kind of movie this is going to be? Well, I'm going to throw a lot at you and I know you can take it and it's going to be fulfilling. Just wait for it.
Yeah. And that's actually kind of a I feel like it was part of the marketing is to blame for this and for its poor performance at the box office, because we didn't really cover it at the beginning, but this movie came in like fifth at the box office and it only made like 10 million this weekend, which is a huge shame. Giant bummer. It deserves so much more than that. But I was talking to my mom and I told her like, oh, I saw Widows and like this movie's fucking amazing. You should definitely check it out if you get the chance. And she was like, oh, that movie, like, I didn't really want to see that. Like, it felt like it was just pandering to like the feminist movement that's, you know, becoming more popular today. And she was citing like, you know, like how Ocean's 8 is just Ocean's 11 with girls and Ghostbusters is just Ghostbusters with girls. She was like, I thought it was just going to be Heat with girls. And I'm just it's so much more than that. Like, I get where you're coming from. And I feel like that sentiment is pretty popular online. But this is so much more than that. Like, don't just write it off as a gender flipped cash grab. It is so much more than that.
Yeah, it's an amazing movie. I think everyone should see it. I think as a film, it's amazing. I think it does a lot that's really good.
Yeah.
Technically good, acting wise, plot wise. Everything is really well executed. And as a flick, it's the most accessible McQueen movie by far.
Yeah.
The least of a downer. But it's
easiest
also like
to watch. Yeah.
Yeah. It's got good pacing. It's got action. It's got really everything. Like, it's a very easy movie to watch. I'd say I'm ready to rewatch this pretty soon.
Me too. In fact, this weekend when I go home for Thanksgiving, I'm probably just going to force my parents to go see it.
Nice. Yeah. Force everyone that you can to see it. It's great.
Yeah. It deserves your money.
It's one of my favorite movies of the year, I think.
It's definitely in my top 10, probably top 5.
Yeah, I definitely agree. All right. Well, you've got another review down. Finally, a really great movie. I feel like I've been waiting for one of these for a while.
Yeah, we've had a couple passable movies recently, but yeah, it's nice that now that we're in award season, I feel like we're finally getting award worthy movies.
Yeah, no, it's. I think this is the first one in a long time where I'm like, oh, I had so much fun watching that. And it was also really good.
Yeah. And like, this is definitely not, it's not Oscar bait either.
Oh, definitely not.
But I hope it gets some Oscars.
Yeah.
At least nominations.
Me too. I think it could. I think it deserves it. But overall, very good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's wrap this bad boy up. I have been your A-host, Mr. Dan Leo. And you know what? You can find me on Twitter at The Dan Leo Show. Get me on Letterboxd, username DLeo. And you know our website, viewingangles.com, and our Twitter handle at viewingangles. Also Instagram. And we're on YouTube, I hear, and Spotify. We're on everything that you could watch media on. We're on it. What about you, Rob? How can the people reach you?
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. And Letterboxd at Robert Jr. JR.
Solid. What are we going to watch next week?
Next week, I think we should review Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Yeah, Ralph and Creed 2. We got a double feature, I think.
Okay. I actually forgot Creed 2 was coming out this weekend. Man, I don't know. The hype is just not there for me for this movie. I don't know why. Maybe it's because Ryan Coogler's not involved.
Right, yeah. I'm interested to see it, but the hype is not there like it was for the first one.
It is getting good early reviews, though. So, you know, it's not like I'm upset about going to watch this movie, but
I love a good boxing movie.
Yeah. I hope there's another one shot at the end.
Oh, yeah. We can only hope.
Yeah.
I don't remember hardly anything about Creed, the first one.
You know what?
I don't remember hardly anything about the first Creed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. I definitely watched it on Amazon Prime one night just because I was like, I heard this is really good.
Yeah,
and
it was.
I enjoyed it. But, boy, the only thing I remember about the first Creed is that Rocky has cancer.
Yeah. Well, I want to die, you know? Well, I will go to the doctor. It's fine, you know? Are you okay, Rock? Like, yeah, no, I'm fine. Like, you
I'm stroking out right now.
Yeah, I'm stroking out. It's fine, you know. You gotta have heart.
Means I can't feel pain on the side of my body.
My butt. All right. Well, enough of making fun of Rocky. We'll catch you all next week on the fun night. Have a good Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yeah, be
this
thankful.
Is a special Thanksgiving
be
episode.
Be thankful for Steve McQueen.
Oh, yeah. Be thankful. And the only best way to say you're thankful is by spending money.
Yeah, indulge in that American consumerism. That's what Black Friday's for.
Oh, yeah. Well, until next week.
Bye. Bye.